If you're going through the session catalog for Java 1 and trying to fill up your timetable, I would suggest you adding in Jim Manico's session on Java security. There's a couple of reasons why I'd recommend that session. First of all, security is important. Another important reason is Jim is an extremely entertaining speaker. And thirdly, the guy knows his stuff. I don't know too many people that know quite as much about security and Java security as Jim does. So, Jim, what is it that people are going to learn if they attend your Java 1 session on Java security?
Well, I'm going to focus solely on Java 9 security and go over some of the different security controls built into Java 9, as well as, you know, some of the impacts of some of the design decisions in Java 9, like modularization and how that impacts security. I'm also going to take a look at some of the new controls in Java 9, like JEP 273, JEP 290, the new unlimited JCE policy, and other topics that really trying to make Java 9 that much more of a secure platform from a LangSec, from like, you know, raw language point of view.
So when it comes to enterprise Java security, what are the things that concern you, and what are the things that should concern people who are doing enterprise software development with Java?
The things that really concern me is that, like the risks against Java. How is Java being attacked? And to a lot of developers, to be honest with you, this is esoteric stuff. So it's not necessarily the most, like, exciting or sexy feature of Java, but I dare say it's the necessary stuff. Like, for example, there's a new JSR that's going to address deserialization and try to allow for direct whitelist filtering of exact classes at multiple tiers within your Java application to try to stop deserialization. This is not exciting stuff, right? But it's necessary to have a secure Java application, or at least it gives you a way to address known Java risks more closely to the core language. It's not sexy, but it's important.
Quite often the enterprise Java developer just focuses on fulfilling the business requirements and doesn't really concern themselves about some of the security implications of the code that they're writing. For some of the code that a developer would write on an everyday kind of basis, what are some of the security concerns they should be taking into account?
I think there's, you know, sometimes the use of numerics for financial processing is a lot more tricky than people would than many developers know about. You know, other problems range from when you're doing, especially older school Java technologies, and you want to provide certain kinds of controls like escaping to stop cross-site scripting. That's not part of the core language. There's some parts of it in J2EE. There's some frameworks that provide it, but it's not like core of the language, and it's a control that's, you know, is. I think it can be made more readily available to the developer. There's also the issue of, you know, all the cryptographic APIs. A lot, I think some of the best cryptographic APIs are not in the core of Java. They're in different, like, Google projects and, like, Libsodium and Google Quasar. I believe there's a new project called Tink. Tink. Google, let me see if I got this right. This is critical. Google Tink is a new project that I'm not even sure if that's a new project. It's Tink. Where is it? Yeah, there it is, Tink. Yes. It's a cryptographic API that makes the Java's world, the Java developer's world of interacting with low-level cryptographic APIs easier. And a lot of that we get from the third-party ecosystem. I'd love to see more of those kind of APIs closer to the core. Yeah, let me rephrase that. The closer these APIs are to the core language, the more likely we're going to get use from the developers, right?
Now, I'm paraphrasing you a bit here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but in one of the previous sessions of yours that I attended, I remember you talking about how you felt that software developers should actually consider themselves security engineers nowadays. What exactly did you mean by that?
You know, the world's changing, and so I challenge that most developers, whether they believe it or not, whether they think it or not, or whether they even do it or not, they're security engineers now, because the code that they're writing is on the front lines of protecting organizations from data loss, financial damage, reputation damage, privacy violations, compliance regulations and fines. And so these developers and the code they write are on the front lines of all those issues and more. And so they're security engineers. So it's a matter of if they're going to do it or not. And if you beat a developer over a head with, like, pen tests and have security teams run tools and, you know, especially early in the maturity, showing the developers to attack their code really will help change a culture. Later on in the maturity, developers are part of conversations at the early part of design with existing security libraries and knowledge and controls in place, like rigorous authentication and access control services and advanced cryptographic services available to developers. And these are controls that very early phases of designing software. That's the ideal, right? But at first, you got to wake developers. If you're at the early phase of maturity, and maybe you haven't done application security in your organization ever before, then I think a lot of assessment, just to see initially where developers are, show them exploits against their software, that's usually a good way early on to help shake up a culture. But, you know, we want to do this way more proactively as we get better at running secure software.
Now, does DevOps change the software security game? How do you feel about DevSecOps?
It's a piece of the puzzle. I think it's a nice word, but the concept is we're automating all aspects of the software lifecycle. Like, we're automating the build process. We've done that for a long time. We're integrating the security tests into the build lifecycle at different phases of building and deploying software. We're automating we're automating dynamic tests. We're automating code scan tests. We're automating deployment of software. And as we deploy software, we run this huge batch of tests, automated unit tests and dynamic tests and static tests against our code looking for security bugs. Maybe if we find security bugs, we're going to stop the build and not allow that code to be deployed. Maybe it's just a warning, we ship it anyway. There's many gradients to how we do that automation. You know, DevOps also talks about automating, different dashboards and alerts. So people who are monitoring the application in real time get better intel on security events happening. And these are things we've done for a long time in software. I think DevOps is putting a little more rigor around it, putting a nice name in front of it, and trying to, at least from my world, add more security to it as much automation as possible. Now, the flip side of that is there's some elements of application security that don't translate really well to automation. Especially if you want to look at a turnkey tool, it's not always great at finding access control problems or business logic problems or deeper problems that maybe a pen tester would find that a turnkey tool, especially a tool that's tuned to work fast in a DevOps environment, you know, maybe a pen tester will find that manually, where automation may miss the problem. And so that's the dark side of DevOps, that we can't just automate everything. We still need people involved at some level of deep review, I think, to really provide deeper security assurance, you know, if that's what you want.
Now, tell me honestly, is the deprecation of the Java web browser plugin the greatest thing to happen to a security analyst?
Yeah, especially for, as a programmer, I'm like, whatever. But as an infrastructure person who's trying to manage a fleet of PCs or Macs or whatnot to keep an organization secure, that not supporting that is usually a good thing, right? You know, I don't want to trash Java, but Java on the client traditionally has not been a great thing. A lot of policies are to heavily limit how Java runs on the client, and so. This is one kick in that direction, which is nice. I'm not saying Java client is bad. It's just it's good for administrators to as much as possible control client side JVMs as much as they can, and having rogue applets from any website just run in the browser and similar technologies is not an ideal situation, right? So we want to restrict that and manage that as best as we can.
Now, when you're working as a security consultant and you go into an organization, what are some of the tools and the governance models and the policies that you'd like to see already in place as soon as you get in there?
So it's like a good authentication service is usually a good idea, right? So for a developer, especially as your organization matures, it's really, rather than having every developer recode in some way parts of an authentication service, having or using a rigorous one that all developers can use in a standard way makes that front gate of your application easier to lock down. And the second layer I look at is, of course, access control. Having a good access control service and series of methodologies and database-driven rules and configuration capability, all that good stuff for really good horizontal, detailed, permission-level access control in a way that all developers of your team can leverage, that's a good idea. You know, we also want to be able to, you know, build user interfaces in a secure fashion. Whatever framework that we're using, we want to understand how to keep that locked down from cross-site scripting, and we also want to make sure developers understand, you know, what's proper data flow to a client, what we should and should not be storing on a client long-term, what kind of logic should and should not run on a client, what stuff should we first server-side, what shouldn't we even do on the client, you know, how are we relating data access and user interface functionality access with the same consistent set of access control rules on both the client and the server. You know, all these things are things that developers do day in and day out that they really need to understand how to use and get right. And if we don't have these tools available, if we're like, you know, yo developer, you know, welcome to the team, go figure out access control now, you know, good luck with that. You know, that's so critical of an area of your software. It's not something you can just, something you shouldn't just casually put into your application. It should be extremely intentional.
So when people walk out of your Tuesday session on the new security enhancements in Java 9, what should be their big takeaway?
Well, I want to point out different aspects of Java 9 that shows that the security of the platform is getting stronger, that concerns that we have against the platform are being addressed as best as possible, and that security is on the mind of the Java platform throughout multiple aspects of it that are useful for developers in a variety of different tasks. So we're going to celebrate the security controls of Java 9. What more exciting of a talk could you go to at Java 1? That's what I have to say. That's what I ask.
And, you know, there are a whole bunch of hot topics at Java 1 2017. There's lots of talk about containers and microservices and Kotlin. But security is important. And if you want to learn about security, there's no better speaker to learn from than Jim Manico. So if you've got an open space at 12:15 on Tuesday, I say go check out his session. You won't be disappointed.